This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, we've got three stories from around the Lone Star State about local government malfeasance. In our interview, we hear from Texas Public Policy Foundation on a bold new plan that could see property taxes cut in half over the next decade. And in this week's commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan shares his philosophy about dealing with bullies in the legal system. Welcome back, friends, neighbors, patriots, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, emanating to you from the 1836 studios. We'll get started with this week's news by going up to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, talk to Ross Kessig. Ross, you've been doing some deep investigative reporting about the mayor of Frisco and his involvement with a PGA deal where he might stand, or at least his employer might stand, to profit. Tell us a little bit about your reporting there.
Yes. Yeah, so the city of Frisco, it's been reported in other news sources that they're working on a deal to give a bunch of taxpayer money to the PGA of America to help incentivize them or encourage them to move their headquarters to Frisco. And what we uncovered is that through sources, through confidential sources close to the deal and from documents we obtained from the city, it appears that the employer of the mayor of Frisco may stand to actually benefit in the deal from the deal directly between the city and the PGA of America.
Well, and the mayor has been intimately involved. It's been going on for several years, this wooing of the PGA to Frisco. A little while back reported that he was taken out and wined and dined and that sort of thing. So he's been involved, but now he's kind of lashing about over this criticism of his conflict of interest.
Yeah, so the exact details of all this are really hard to know for sure because state law doesn't require that any details surrounding these taxpayer-funded, you know, economic development deals are actually disclosed to the taxpayers who are footing the bill. And so when we reported on it, when we put facts together from sources, from documents that the mayor filed with the city and from other news reports, when we actually put all those facts together and reported on what was believed to be going on, the mayor actually threatened to sue us.
Yeah, you know, that's the interesting part. The sources are such a critical element of this because all of these negotiations, $100 million alleged potential payout, all happening behind closed doors. This can happen in any community because of the way state law works on closed meetings and economic development. And so if we don't have sources saying, hey, there's something that stinks here, you really wouldn't necessarily know anything, but thankfully we do. And here the mayor is coming at us and he's threatening, hey, I want to uncover those sources. I want to expose those sources and, you know, do what with them?
Yeah, it's really crazy. Without sources close to the deal that are willing to leak information to the press, the public would have absolutely no clue what's going on behind closed doors with their own taxpayer dollars. And the reason for that is because back in 1999, state lawmakers exempted these economic development giveaways, these corporate welfare handout negotiations. They exempted them from the Open Meetings Act and the Public Information Act. And again, because we reported on these details that we put together between, you know, disclosure forms that the mayor filed with the city and from sources close to the deal, you know, now he's threatening to sue us. And part of what his lawyer admitted in a letter to us is that the reason for him suing us is to try to uncover our sources.
Yeah, well, the most amazing thing to me is you've got this guy lashing about and threatening this lawsuit over a story that they confirm is accurate. They've confirmed that the mayor is going to recuse himself on the vote.
Right. They confirmed he's going to recuse himself from the vote. They didn't initially admit that the mayor had a conflict of interest or a potential conflict of interest, but we put in an open records request as part of our investigative report, and we finally got the document, which shows that Mayor Jeff Chaney filed and declared that he had a conflict of interest. Now, the problem is he didn't actually cite specifically what the conflict was about. He said it was with his employer, and he said it was with something, you know, before city council. But again, he hasn't come out and publicly explained you know, this is what the nature of the conflict is, which is what we were reporting on.
And what and that's what taxpayers need to know if the city's going to be handing out money. Well, I appreciate your reporting on it, Ross. This is not the end of the story. There's definitely going to be more to cover. So I look forward to having you back on when we have the next update. Next up, let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau. Jacob, City of Austin, you know, they got struck down on being a sanctuary city last year by the legislature. Now we're changing our name to a freedom city. Sounds more like chaos to me. Tell us a little bit about the policy.
It's more like not enforcing the law.
Lawlessness city. Tell us about what the city's doing.
So they passed a couple resolutions instructing officers to do several things. One was to refrain from arresting minorities for what they call low-level offenses.
Now, is this specifically refrain from arresting minorities, not all people, just racial minorities?
Yes. Yes. So they instruct them to refrain from arresting for things like minor theft, suspended driver's license, disorderly conduct, things like that.
Drug use,
yeah. Drug paraphernalia. All that kind of stuff.
Lots of people saying City of Austin, streets of Austin are going to look a lot like San Francisco in a year or two.
Right. And it hasn't been going well for San Francisco. You know, I looked up some
basically
data.
Basically have to stumble over the hypodermics, you know, yeah. If you're in the city of San Francisco.
It's true. You know, 3.5% roughly of the population is illegal immigrants. And yet they commit about 20 to 37% of the homicides
wow.
in our country.
Wow.
So that's a big problem.
Yeah. And so you're wanting to coddle the illegal immigrants. Part of this is don't cooperate with ICE.
Right. The resolutions also instruct them to not cooperate, to skeptically scrutinize requests from ICE.
Stonewall them.
Basically. And also, it instructs officers to inform folks that they can remain silent when asked about immigration status.
So they ask the immigration question, then they specifically tell them, yeah, you don't have to answer that.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So, of course, it's not going to get answered. So what police kind of reacting to this, saying, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's the president of the Austin Police Association, Ken Cassaday, called this race baiting. And he said that a lot of the data that Greg Kassar, who championed the resolution.
The communist on
yes.
the city council, literally a communist on the
yes.
city council, who championed the resolution.
Yeah, he said that a lot of the data he used was skewed and misleading. And it made up a racially charged accusation that wasn't there.
Yeah.
And it's really causing a lot of strife that doesn't need to be there and discouraging police from doing their job.
Yeah. Look, the reality is we're going to see the negative consequences of this policy. It's probably going to end up in court, but there's going to be negative consequences on the street that we're going to see over the next couple of years. So we'll hear back from you.
Of course. Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's go down to Charles Blaine in Houston. Charles, you've been covering Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner's efforts as he's going to ask the voters to lift the spending cap in the city. He keeps kind of talking about, oh, well, shared sacrifice. We have to tighten things up. We got to have a bare bones budget. But he isn't really doing that with his own office staff. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Yeah, he's been using this rhetoric ever since he came into office, you know, just talking about how we need to reduce spending and tighten things up around council. And one of the biggest things he did and one of the first things he did was to grow government. He created this Office of Education and hired the city's first director of education. And she was a former HISD trustee who had lost her reelection bid. So he brought her on board to increase coordination among the city and the districts, whatever that actually means, we have yet to find out. But it has turned out to be nothing more than really a slush fund, just a lot of money being spent on things that we're not seeing a return for.
Yeah, so basically this is a make-work position for somebody connected to the mayor. I mean, the reality is the city of Houston doesn't need an education department. It doesn't provide education. That's something that's handled by the school districts.
Exactly. Yeah, there's really nothing there that they can do. And even if they are doing something, HISD has really fallen apart this last year. So they're clearly not doing a great job if they are doing something.
Yeah, right.
But it makes no sense. But the city, as you said, has no involvement in education. And, you know, when he brought her on board, he didn't really do it with consultation of council because it was something that he could do within his office. And he decided to pay her $89,000. And in
the short time span that she's been there, her salary's jumped to $105,000. She has an executive assistant who's also salaried. The taxpayers have paid out just under $500,000 worth of salaries and benefits for these two employees to do we don't know what.
Well, and there's a lot of expensive travel involved as well.
For sure, yeah. She's been doing a lot of traveling over these past 2 years. Credit card statements show that she's been, you know, from Austin to Boston, few times to New York and Philadelphia, and she's not staying at, you know, budget lodging either. She's staying at, you know, Boston's Park Plaza Hotel. I had to Google that one. It's like a 4.5, 5-star hotel in Boston. She's staying at the Intercontinental when she goes to Austin, the Aloft, the Hotel San Jose. So she's staying at a lot of nice places, spending a lot of money on lodging, on, you know, airport parking fees and cab fees and just all these different things that are adding up. And it's shocking because, again, this position did not exist before Turner created it.
It doesn't need to exist. Well, I appreciate your reporting on it. I think we've got to continue to expose some of the hypocrisy in City Hall as they go to ask taxpayers to pay more money. They need to actually tighten their belt, not just act like they're doing it.
Certainly. Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome on the program this week Kara Ballou, Senior Policy Advisor with Texas Public Policy Foundation. Thanks for joining us, Kara.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I wanted to have you on to talk about a really groundbreaking study that TPPF has out earlier this month on property taxes, basically saying, hey, if we tighten our belt, if we exercise some fiscal restraint at the state level, we can do some really dramatic, really cool things in terms of reducing property taxes at the local level. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about your new study.
Wonderful to be able to talk about the study and potentially the great things that it could do for our Texas families and businesses that are paying property taxes. I think any Texan who's opened up a property tax bill recently is seeing a huge, almost staggering year-over-year increase in the amount of money that they owe. And at some point, that becomes unsustainable for families or people on a fixed income. And certainly, your property tax bill may surpass or increase a lot faster than your ability to pay, which can literally force families out of their homes.
Yeah, one of the things y'all pointed out in the study was that Texas has one of the highest property tax burdens in the nation, actually coming in sixth place.
Yeah, I mean, we really do have very high property taxes, and some of that's a good thing, or points to a good thing, which is that our home values are going up, are increasing, because our economy is very robust and we're a state that's doing tremendous things and attracting a lot of employers. But as those home values rise, so do the property taxes, and that's becoming unsustainable.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we see a lot of excitement out on the campaign trail of various campaigns, like basically, you know, aside from immigration, border security issues, which are always a hot topic, property taxes are right up there, either the number one or number two topic for voters. And but a lot of the proposals we see coming from, you know, good proposals from the governor, lieutenant governor, from other political leaders about kind of reducing the rate of property tax increase, not actually doing tax relief, not actually cutting taxes at the local level. That's what's so cool to me about the study that y'all have out, is this would actually lead to a real, honest-to-goodness tax cut. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how this would work and how it would function?
I agree, you know, and certainly having looked at taxes a lot, that we obviously want to see any program that would even slow the rate of property tax growth would be fantastic. However, when we looked around at the landscape, what TPPF really wanted to do is put together a proposal that would result in genuine tax relief and the eventual elimination of a big part of the property tax the maintenance and operation part of the tax. And so what we propose is that the state of Texas, when the legislature comes in to adopt its budget, would be able to adopt a budget, but that budget can only grow 4%. So it would be a restriction on the amount of state growth, which we think is very reasonable. We allow for some growth. And that any additional money that the state is collecting in taxes above the 4% that we're allowing for growth in the budget would be required to be utilized to provide property tax relief, so genuine reductions in people's property tax bills. And we think that if the economy stays robust and if past data is any indication of the future, over around 11 years, we would be able to completely eliminate the maintenance and operations part of the property tax, which is usually, you know, 40 to 50% of the average Texan's property tax bill.
Yeah, so what we're talking about here basically is coming into the state government and saying, we need a good hard spending cap. We need to make, you know, tough choices and basically say, look, we don't want the state government to grow anymore relative to the people. It can grow to deal with more population and inflation and those kinds of things, but not really grow in terms of scope. And we would then take the growth in the economy, the growth in revenue, and because that's outpacing the growth of the state government, we could put that money towards eliminating this M&O property tax. And so I guess basically the magic of the numbers here is if you look at the past decade, if I understand this correctly, we've had basically 10% growth in the revenue that the state has brought in. And if we stick with that and have that over the next decade, but we keep state government growth to 4%, that's kind of a 6% delta that we can use. You know, we could waste it, we could spend it on whatever, or we could put it towards real property tax relief.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is that we want to restrain the growth of government at the state level. So if the state, you know, continues to generate quite a bit of cash at the, you know, from sales taxes and other tax sources, that instead of taking that money and spending it to increase the size of government, what we should be doing is going ahead and returning that money to Texans through property tax relief. So any money that's in excess, that the state's collecting in excess of the 4%, which we think is a reasonable growth rate, go ahead and provide our hardworking families and our businesses and employers with property tax relief that they desperately need.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the maintenance and operation tax and the taxes that fund schools and what we're actually talking about replacing with state revenue versus leaving in place. So basically, at the local level, you have, you know, bonds. Local districts will issue bonds and they'll pay for the actual buildings and those kind of things. But there's also the maintenance and operation tax that funds the day-to-day operations and the running of the schools. The problem there is it's kind of centrally accounted by the state. So we call it the Robin Hood tax through Robin Hood, this program of taking money from richer property-rich districts and giving it to property-poor districts. You really just kind of centrally balance this stuff through Austin. And so the idea of this study is let's limit the growth of government in Austin and use the excess revenue to actually fund those operations of the schools rather than making local property taxpayers pay it and then, you know, rejiggering it on the accounting sheet in Austin.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, and a part of the plan that we're excited about is that because Robin Hood is necessary to essentially equalize maintenance and operation tax differences across the state, if you start eliminating the maintenance and operations property tax, you actually eliminate Robin Hood. And we all know there's a lot of our school districts who are very upset where the taxpayers are paying a lot in for their property taxes, but that money's not going to their local school district. It ends up being collected through Robin Hood at the state level and then dispersed to other school districts. So by buying down over time and eventually eliminating the maintenance and operations tax, you also get rid of Robin Hood, which would be very nice for many of our communities.
Yeah. Well, and to talk a little bit about what this would do for education spending, you know, one of the points of frustration, I see this out in campaigns, I saw it over the last election cycle, you know, you had the more conservative candidates saying, hey, let's, you know, really cut property taxes, maybe cut property taxes by half. You know, if they're signing onto this, they'd say, hey, let's cut property taxes by half. You got the other guys who are kind of more establishment types running saying, well, we want to cut property taxes by a quarter. And I kind of go, well, great. At least we're headed in the right direction. But what they're really talking about is kind of what we're talking about. Let's have the state pay a larger share of the operating costs of the schools and that way reduce local property taxes.
And I think a benefit of the way that the proposal from TPPF works is that we do it over time. So the state is not having to raise taxes in order to buy down local property taxes,
right,
or reduce them. It can slowly, as the state has surplus or extra revenue, utilize that revenue to help out at the local level. And so school districts are made whole while property taxes are relieved, and we're restraining growth at both the state and local level.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think as I look at this proposal, there have been many different proposals out there of people saying, well, let's replace property taxes with a higher sales tax, or let's do something along those lines. And you look at it and you go, this is really legislatively unfeasible. I mean, this is something that it's such a huge shock and such a big change that nobody's really going to go for that. But that's the cool thing with this study is you're saying, look, let's just limit the growth. Let's put the money to the property tax relief. And then every session, it kind of starts a great conversation. Do we want to spend extra on program X or program Y or program Z? Or do we want to reduce property taxes and stay on schedule? I think I really like that kind of debate going on in state government.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other proposal that's talked about quite a bit, and it's very interesting, and something that I think people are going to continue to consider is trying to do a tax swap where we increase property or we increase sales taxes and reduce property taxes. And there can be some adverse economic issues that come up with that because you're going to have a higher sales tax rate. You have to consider how high that rate is compared to other states and what that's going to do to the economy.
Right.
So I think one thing that's great about the TPPF plan is we are not having to increase taxes at all. No sales tax increase, no state income tax, none of those things to generate additional money at the state level. What it will require is the state really budgeting and making some good decisions about how it wants to use taxpayer dollars, and then allowing for the surplus to be utilized to help our families who are trying to stay in their homes and are hurting with these high tax bills.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that struck me looking at the study is it's kind of the miracle of compound interest, or at least can kind of be the opposite of a miracle if we don't plan for it correctly. If the economy continues to grow, the state government's going to see tremendous revenue growth. And if nothing's done, this money's going to be wasted, whereas here we have this tremendous opportunity with just a little bit of foresight to actually do something that'll really help property taxpayers. So it's almost to me like we have a need to do this in order to avoid the crisis of state government having too much money on its hands.
Yeah, I mean, I really think restraining the growth at the state level would be an amazing thing for us to do, because we have seen at times when there's been large surpluses in Texas, the Texas legislature spend quite a bit of that money and really increase the size of government. And so having a automatic restraint on the ability to grow and making them carefully review every taxpayer dollar and how it's being utilized and ensure that it's programs that they want to keep and that are appropriate, and then actually having to use any additional money toward tax relief, that's great at the state level and the local level.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think listeners are going to be very interested in this. Essentially, a plan to say, let's cut property taxes in half over 10, 11 years. Pretty cool. That's, you know, a big project for the next decade. Tell listeners where they can learn about the study, find the study, and learn more about your work there at Texas Public Policy Foundation.
So the study is available on the Texas Public Policy Foundation's website, and I am one of their experts on public education, finance, and the state budget. And so they can come and look at me and look at the website and hear more about what we're trying to accomplish.
Great. TexasPolicy.com, is that the website?
Yes, sir.
All right, great. Well, thank you for coming on, Kara. Thank you for your hard work. Really appreciate this study and appreciate you joining us.
Up next in this week's commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us what we should do whenever we square off against a bully in the legal system.
A society that values liberty cannot tolerate bullies and cronies. And our experience is that the beneficiaries of government cronyism will try to bully anyone who exposes their schemes. So we fight back. With today's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Fortunately, we're not special in this sense. Last week was the 60th anniversary of the landmark NAACP versus Alabama decision at the Supreme Court. The racist Democrats running Alabama in the 1950s were upset that citizens were starting to question the horrible policies they implemented to deny blacks their civil rights. So the state tried to bully the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People into turning over their donor and supporter lists. The NAACP refused, and the U.S. Supreme Court sided with the NAACP against the racist bullies. The court ruled that nonprofit organizations, especially political ones, don't have to turn over the names of their donors and supporters because of the threat of political and physical intimidation. In other words, bullying. That same judicial and governing philosophy has been confirmed in numerous other rulings, including a Texas Supreme Court ruling in the late 1990s written by a justice named Greg Abbott. At the same time, journalists have long been allowed to shield their sources. Thuggish government bureaucrats and their crony pals don't like whistleblowers spilling the beans on shady acts conducted behind closed doors. We at Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard don't like bullies, no matter what form they take. We have successfully fought off those who have tried to intimidate our donors and our sources into silence. For example, there was Salem Abraham, the self-described multimillionaire school board member from Canadian, Texas, who didn't like that a website unaffiliated with Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard honestly reported on his political activities. So he sued us. He wanted the names of our donors and the source of the article. The court told him no. He now owes us a lot of money. There were the cronies of disgraced House Speaker Joe Strauss who used a state agency to attack us to get the names of our donors. We've now got that agency on the ropes. Oh yeah, there was the political consulting firm that tried to steal our brand name to help candidates we endorsed against. They don't exist anymore. Well, you get the idea. We don't like bullies, and we fight against them aggressively. And we win. That should serve as a bit of a roadmap for Frisco Mayor Jeff Cheney, who was discussed earlier in the show. Our Metroplex bureau chief reported from sources on Cheney's conflicts of interest. He raised a hoot and a holler, got his lawyer to send us a childish demand letter, all so he could get the names of City Hall sources. As it turns out, every word Ross Kessig reported was true. Everything the sources said was spot-on accurate. Mayor Cheney just doesn't like voters finding out about it. Well, too bad. Empowering Texans means exposing cronyism, whether it's in the schoolhouse, city halls, or the legislature. Liberty is threatened by backroom deal-making where politicians dole out favors and your money to their pals. Our mission is not to get a seat at the table, it's to knock down the walls to those back rooms. Our mission is to shine more light on government. In particular, we exist to shine a light on governing misdeeds. When people use the taxpayers' money to help themselves and their pals, we'll be there to report on it. When politicians say one thing when they campaign and something else when they govern, we'll be there to point it out. Frisco Mayor Jeff Cheney may think he looks like a tough guy, telling people he'll sue us into silence and intimidate our sources and donors. He'll either back down or learn the lessons of what being a bully gets him the hard way. But we're fine either way. Good luck, Jeff. With a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I've got for you. We're out of here. Until next week, check us out on iTunes or at TexasScorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at EmpowerTexans.com.